Okay, so I think we finished Esther chapter 4. This technically is our last class on Esther, but I think we're going to run out of time this class. So I'll probably borrow the afternoon class too to finish Esther. But definitely we're just going to finish it today. And tomorrow we go on to the next topic. Okay. All right. Esther chapter 5. Let's go to Esther chapter 5. So Esther chapter 5, this is after the fasting. Let's read verse 1. Esther chapter 5, verse 1. Monica. Okay, verse 2, keep reading. Okay, amen. Here we see that God was with Esther. The fasting prayer really did have the effect that the Jews were looking for, or Esther was looking for, which was that Esther could present herself without offending the king, and that her life actually was still spared. So, even though God, again, his name is not mentioned, but his hand is very clear in this book, including here in the very key moment. Okay, let's now read verse 3 and 3 through 5. Eno. Okay, so Esther prepared a banquet. This maybe was an inspiration from God or whatnot, but she decided that she was not going to bring her request directly to the king, but kind of ease towards it, right? And so she knew that, like in general, when you're making a request from somebody, it's generally better if the person's in a good mood, right? You agree? When you want to ask your parents for money or for something, like you want to buy something, you usually wait for the right time, right? The right time, like maybe after dinner or people are in a good mood. Okay, so Esther, same thing. Esther first has a banquet the first day, and then there's a banquet the second day too, because the first day, I guess she thought, maybe one more day. So let's read six through eight. Stephen. Verse 8, keep reading. Mm-hmm. If I found favor in the sight of the king, and if it pleases the king to grant my petition and fulfill my request, then let the king and Haman come to the banquet, which I will prepare for them. And tomorrow I'll do as the king has said. Okay. To me, this is a very, very funny line, verse 8, right? Because there's so much suspense, right? Like, king, if I have found favor in the sight of the king, and if it pleases the king to grant my petition, to fulfill my request, then please come tomorrow and I'll tell you. So, yeah, so the king agrees. The king agrees. But in the meantime, Haman goes home, right? This is between the two feasts. So this part is also interesting and related to family life. Let's read Esther chapter 5, verses 9 through 11. Esther chapter 5, verses 9 through 11. Sabrina. You could just stop. Yeah, stop right there. Okay, so here, Haman, he exited this feast, this banquet. He went out there that really joyful and glad. But then once Haman saw Mordecai, then he was filled with indignation. You see his emotions were not very stable, right? Like, once he saw somebody, then boom, like, his whole mood is changed. Sometimes that happens to us too, right? I don't know. Ever have that happen to you? You're like really happy with your friends in high school, then the enemy appears. Right? The enemy. You're like, OMG or something. I don't know. Shouldn't say that, right? Or then you're like, oh, and then your whole mood changes, and then you start gossiping to your friends about that person. I don't know. Okay. So Haman, his emotion, and especially his happiness, you can say, was determined by, really determined by other people. Okay? And of course, this is natural. Like, our emotions, our mood often is determined by the company that we have. But it seemed like to me, Haman was more extreme, right? Haman was like a very insecure person, that even like one person not honoring him can affect his whole day. Okay. So we have to try to get into an emotional state where it's not so easily swayed by other people and like what they do and like how, what they say to us. If we look at 1 Corinthians chapter 4, 1 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 3 and 4. 1 Corinthians chapter 4, verses 3 and 4. Hansen. I was about to call you Haman. Hansen. Yeah, 4 verse 3. Okay, right? So Paul was able to get into a mindset where when he was criticized by other people, especially like he had a lot of enemies in the Corinthian church, some enemies in the Corinthian church, he felt that was a very small thing that he was judged by them or even by any human court. He didn't really care about the court of public opinion. Okay, he didn't really care, right? Because he didn't even judge himself. Okay? He knew that he had nothing against himself, meaning like his conscience was clear. As long as your conscience is clear, you really don't have to worry about too many comments from the outside. Of course, if you have mistakes, if you have flaws and weaknesses, then yeah, those are things that you should also be concerned about and you should work on. But if your conscience is clear, and like maybe you're in church, you're doing things with the right for the right reasons, and you also did it with the best that you could, then your conscience is clear, right? And you don't really have to be influenced too much by what people say. When people do give us suggestions, like maybe next time you can do this a little better, or like I noticed you did this, and this is an improvement. Of course, you can take that as constructive criticism. But sometimes people are not very constructive, and they'll just say things that tear you down, or want, or is that is intended to tear you down. And in that case, that's where we really need to be like Paul, and like if we have a clear conscience and we really tried our best, then we know that we can stand before God without any shame. Okay. And then ultimately, Paul knew it was God who was going to be the judge. Okay. It's not a popular vote, right, from the people around us. It's going to be God who's the ultimate judge. He's the an upright and just judge who's going to make the final final call, the final judgment. Okay. So for Haman, he was not a very emotionally stable person, in my opinion. And just one glance at Mordecai made his face cast down. Okay, let's go back to Esther chapter 5. Esther chapter 5 now reveals to us his relationship with his wife, too. Okay. Verse 10, to Haman's credit, okay, verse 10, Haman did restrain himself. Okay, so he didn't, like, just start yelling at Mordecai. But he restrained himself. But this restraint was what? Like a hatred, like a brewing hatred within him. So it's also not that healthy. Okay. He still did restrain himself. He sent and called for his friends and his wife, Zeresh. And he told them of his great riches, the multitude of his children, everything in which the king had promoted him, and how he advanced them above the officials and the servants of the king. So again, here I feel like Haman is a very insecure person. In order to, I don't know, he had to really brag amongst his friends, right, of all these things that the king had done for him, and how great his life was. Okay. So if we jump ahead to verse 14. Okay, or verse 12 and 13. Basically, verse 12 and 13 is Haman saying, Esther invited nobody else except for me to come to the banquet, and tomorrow I'm invited again to have a feast with her along with the king. But all of this doesn't matter as long as I see Mordecai, right, sitting in the king's gate. So he confesses to them his problem, what's on his mind. And then what did his wife and his friends say to him? Let's read verse 14. Angela. Okay. So Haman and his wife, and of course, the friends were involved here too. But since the wife is placed first in this verse, I think perhaps she had also, maybe this was mostly her opinion. She said, let a gallows be made 50 cubits high, and in the morning suggest the king that Mordecai be hanged on it. Okay. So this is also goes back to like marriage, right? And how Haman and Zeresh's marriage is something that we shouldn't learn from. Okay. From an objective point of view,
from an objective point of view, it seemed like they were, it's actually, I mean, in general, it's good for husband and wife to be what? United, right? And like what? They were helping each other. Or at least Zeresh was helping Haman. By giving him a suggestion to help solve his problems. Right? But of course, from an absolute point of view, from God's standard, it's never, this is not really helping because she's basically encouraging Haman to murder. Yeah, right, to murder. To kill somebody who doesn't really deserve that type of death for this type of crime. Right? So, like, from an objective point of view, it does seem like Haman and Zeresh had a decent relationship, okay? In that sense, like, they were connected together in that sense. They were, like, same mind, same values and such. So, like, you'll see many couples like this in the world, right? You see many couples. They're united in that sense. They're together. They have the same pursuit in life. And whatnot, right? But that's actually not, from God's point of view, it's not a good marriage. It's not a good marriage, right? I mean, one marriage that also reminds me of Haman and Zeresh is, does their marriage remind you of someone else? Yeah, Ananias and Sapphira, right? Ananias and Sapphira. Right. Again, like Ananias and Sapphira, they were also united. Sapphira and Ananias, or at least Sapphira, publicly was defending Ananias, right? To attest that Ananias did tell the truth. Yes, this is the proceeds of the sale we made. This is all of it, right? So Sapphira respected Ananias in that sense, like gave Ananias face, right, in that sense. But here, this unity was what? You could say, bottom line, it was for sin. Bottom line here, also, for sin. So, in the future, you probably will get married too. But don't let that marriage be a unity for sin, because that's, from an eternal perspective, it's not good. Maybe you enjoy your time with your spouse. You enjoy the time because, I think this is, they have a good relationship in that sense, though, right? Like, they're communicating, they're really like a couple, okay? But if that unity is towards evil, then God is not delighted with that marriage. Okay. So in the future, like, if you see your spouse doing something that is not right in God's eyes, you should speak up. Okay, you can speak up. These are really short, huh? I'll just keep this one here. Okay, so a couple examples. Let's say one day your spouse says that, "Oh, I'm so tired. I don't want to go to church today. Right? I don't want to go to church on Sabbath." Right? We're their spouse. We know that that's not good, right? We know that that's not keeping God's commandment, that on this day, we should not just seek our personal pleasure and comfort, but actually delight in the Lord, right? Delight in the Lord. So what should we do in that situation? What should you do in that situation? Paul, huh? You don't know? Hansen. Okay. All right. Tell them God's principle somehow, right? Remind them of God's principle. What if in the end they decide they don't want to go? What would you do? They just don't refuse. I'm tired. Leave me alone. Xingru. What would you do? Pray, okay, pray. What about eventually, would you go to church by yourself that day or would you stay home? You would go. Okay. How many of you guys would go to church? Okay, I think that's the right move too. If ultimately your spouse says they don't want to go to church, I think we should still go to church, right? You already made your case. You already like warned the person. You go to church. So to me, it's very weird. It's kind of weird. Let's say, I mean, everyone's faith will go through up and downs, right? Ups and downs. But it's kind of weird if a couple, a church couple, both are in Christ, both of them somehow disappear from the church. Do you know what I mean? Because if, let's say, one person's faith was not doing so well, then the other can pick the person up, just like in Ecclesiastes, right? Try to warn them. And even if they decide not to take your suggestion, your advice, you yourself, you still have your relationship with God, right? So you can also go to church, right? You can also be faithful to God. So when, for some reason, like, I sometimes see some couples, both of them suddenly just disappear, stop coming to church together, then to me, that marriage, maybe there's something else, right? Something else wrong. There, maybe both of their faith was not really established in the first place. Okay. So part of the reason why God wants us to, why God said it's not good for man to be alone, why God is instituted marriage in the first place, is for us to help one another. Not just help in air quotes, help in really the godly sense, from God's standard. Okay. I mean, another couple you can add is what? Adam and Eve. Right? United again, what? To sin. So one time I stumbled upon a title of a book. I didn't read the book, but I think I understand what the author was getting at. The author of the book was The Silence of Adam. Right? The Silence of Adam. Like, if you see your spouse sinning or doing something that's heading towards the wrong direction, we need to speak up. That's truly helping the person. Not just go along with it and not say anything. And be like, oh, my husband doesn't want to go to church today. My wife doesn't want to go to church today. And then, okay, I want to do something else too. So, you know, you just both don't go to church, right? So there was a sister, right? A sister, she married a brother. This brother was in the United States, doing a PhD program. Okay, very busy with research and everything. And then while he was studying there in between the program, in the middle of the program, then she married. She was in Taiwan and then married the brother who was in the United States doing the PhD program. And then when she married into the, this brother, then after after some time, she realized that the brother was sometimes refusing to go to church or saying he didn't want to go to church because he had a lot of work to do. He had a lot of research to do on the Sabbath. Okay, so what did the sister do? Sister said, hey, I married a brother in the church because, you know, to keep the faith. If I if I didn't want to go to church, then I could have just married someone else, right? But I married the brother in the church so that we can keep the faith. We got to go to church, right? So thankfully, she spoke up. The brother realized that, yeah, it's wrong. And then they started going to church more regularly. You know, so this is just one example that I heard about. Okay? So in the future, you'll be making a lot of decisions with your spouse. Of course, in general, you'll probably have to be in agreement in a lot of those things because, you know, you're married. You do want to make sure everything's harmonious, peaceful in the home. But when it comes to things regarding the truth, we all have to be alert. We all have to have our personal relationship with God and know what is right, and then tell the other when the other person is not doing something right. Okay? Don't just remain silent like Adam, but speak up and remind each other to walk in God's way. Right? Walk in God's way. So for me, the couple that I really admire in the Bible is, well, let me just hear from you guys. Like, what's a couple you really admire in the Bible? Paul? Priscilla and Aquila. Yeah, that's the same thing. Same thing for me. Right? Yeah. Aquila and Priscilla really is a very good marriage you can learn from. You can study them. There's only a few verses in the Bible about them, but if you study it, you can learn a lot. I've preached a whole sermon on them before, okay? And since we're not talking about them, we won't go into detail, but overall you can see that they were very good couple, very united to serve the Lord, okay? United to serve the Lord and help each other to go in that direction. Okay, let's go back to Esther chapter 5. All right, Esther chapter 5, Zeresh and Haman, they came up with this idea. Let's make a gallows 50 cubits high to hang Mordecai. Haman thought it was a great idea, and he had the gallows made. Okay, let's now go to chapter 6. These are some very miraculous events, right? That night, the king could not sleep. So he started to read the history books. Okay. And then what happened? He stumbled upon the entry that said that Mordecai revealed this conspiracy against him. And then he asked his servants, what did we do for him? Did we do anything for him? They said, no, nothing has been done for him. Okay. So then the king said, oh, so this is like the next day, right? And then Haman comes in to make the suggestion to hang Mordecai. So it just so happens that God arranged for the king to stumble upon Mordecai's good deed toward him, right as Haman had plotted something very evil that was going to be like very imminent, that will hurt Mordecai. It's not just waiting until the 13th day of the 12th month for all the Jews to be annihilated. This is now like something that was going to impact Mordecai very quickly. So God arranged for that very miraculously. And so Haman walked in. The king asked Haman, oh, like if you were to honor someone, if the king delights in somebody, how should the king honor him? And Haman, being very proud, very self-absorbed person, actually this is quite natural too, right? Sometimes I find myself doing the same thing, like, person is talking about something else, and I thought they're talking about like me or something, and then I realized no, they weren't talking to me at all, right? Like one time,
This is when I was a TTP student. Church members at that point in time had been like treating me to go to meals outside. Okay, anyway, I went to a new location, and then these members, they just said like, hey, we'd like to have lunch, a meal with you. Right, we'll have a meal with you. And then I just assumed that it's going to be in a restaurant. And then I like reply to them and say something like, oh, something simple is fine. Right? Something simple is fine. I think in the email or whatever, it was clear that I assumed that it was going to be somewhere else, not in the home. Right? So then after a few hours, I realized how did I get so puffed up, right? Thinking that members, when they share a meal with me, it has to be in a restaurant. Like, where did I get that idea? Okay. So then, I realized my error, and then the next day, I forgot exactly what happened, right? But I think it was in the family's home. Okay, it was in the family's home. And at first, I thought it might be awkward because, I had implied it was going to be somewhere else. But thank God it was not even mentioned. Yeah, it wasn't even mentioned. So thank God that's over. Right? Yeah. But anyway, sometimes things, we are sometimes very selfish. Often, almost always, we're very selfish and just thinking about ourselves. And we have to be very careful, though, right? And try to think about the interests of others and think about the other people's situation and not just think of what's good for us, right? Or what we think we deserve or whatnot. Haman, he thought the king was talking about him. He just assumed it. And Haman then says, oh, we should do this, we should do that, right? Put on a royal robe that the king has worn. You should put him on a horse that the king has ridden. Right? This is all, as long as the king touched it, right? It's something that would be good for the person to be honored, because it's as if he has a little bit of that royal status there. Okay. Then he should have a royal crest or a crown that is placed on his head. Okay. And then they should parade this person on horseback in the city square so that everyone knows this is the man that the king honors. And little did he know that while Haman was thinking about only about himself, actually the king was going to do this for Mordecai. Right? Mordecai. So then right away the king says, take this robe and horse and whatever you suggested, everything that you said, and do it for Mordecai, the Jew, who sits within the king's gate. Okay. So here, Haman has to basically eat his own words, and the one that he despised, the king elevated before everyone. Okay. So this is a very clear fulfillment of the verse in the Bible. God opposes the proud, but gives grace to the humble. If we are proud and we puff ourselves up, then eventually we're going to come crashing down. Right? But if we're humble and meek and think about the interests of others, God will one day exalt us. Right? He will lift us up. We don't lift ourselves up. God will lift ourselves up. Right? He will invite us to sit at the place of honor. We don't initiate ourselves to sit at the place of honor. Okay, so Mordecai was paraded through horseback on the city square. And it was proclaimed, this is the man whom the king delights to honor. So then Haman saw this, hurried to his house, mourning and with his head covered. Verse 13, when Haman told his wife Zeresh and all his friends everything that happened to him. His wise men and his wife Zeresh said to him, "If Mordecai, before whom you have begun to fall, is of Jewish descent, you will not prevail against him, but will surely fall before him." Verse 14, while they were still talking with him, the king's eunuchs came and hastened to bring Haman to the banquet which Esther had prepared. So here, Haman and his wife and the friends said something very interesting. He said, if Mordecai, before whom you have begun to fall, is of Jewish descent, you will not prevail against him, but surely will fall before. So this is like a little bit of foreshadowing. Okay? Telling telling Haman that he eventually is going to fall before these people. Okay. This is very interesting. How God used these people to say something that eventually was going to happen. Okay, up to chapter 6, any questions? Let's go to chapter 7. Chapter 7 is the second banquet. Second banquet. And the king asked the queen again, what is your petition, Queen Esther? It should be granted to you. And then the Queen Esther then finally reveals her true intent. Let's read verse 3 through 4. Esther chapter 7, verse 3 through 4. Benny. So the queen, Esther, reveals that her people will be killed, will be annihilated. And then she presents it also in a very humble way, right? Like, if we were to be sold into slavery, like, I would have still held my tongue, right? And even though it would be a great loss to you because you lose your queen, right? You lose your queen. So this is when finally Esther reveals her identity, right, basically kind of revealing her identity and letting the king know also in a very suspenseful way, right, like what's going on in her heart. So the king is curious and starts to get angry too, because the way that Esther framed it made the king understand that it's going to be a great loss to him. So the king asks the queen, verse 5, who is he and where is he? Who would dare presume in his heart to do such a thing? Esther then makes the big reveal. The adversary and enemy is this wicked Haman. And so Haman was terrified before the king and queen. This is when Haman, I think, realized that Esther is a Jew. Right? Esther is a Jew this whole time. And his plot to kill all the Jews is deeply flawed because now the king is going to lose his beloved queen. Okay. So, verse 7, the king arose in his wrath from the banquet of wine and went to the palace garden. But Haman stood before Queen Esther, pleading for his life, for he saw that evil was determined against him by the king. So the tables have completely turned. When the king returned from the palace garden to the place of the banquet of wine, Haman had fallen across the couch where Esther was. Then the king said, will he also assault the queen while I am in the house? Right. So when he comes back, he sees Haman fallen across the couch. So I don't know exactly how to picture this, but basically it seemed like it's very inappropriate. Like he was getting way too close while he's pleading for his life from Esther. And then he interpreted it as, oh, he's now going to assault my queen. So then the king got even more angry, Right? So the timing here, again, also I think arranged by God. Like the king just so happened to come back and see that Haman's in this really awkward position. Okay. And so, verse 9, right? One of the eunuchs, very bright idea, he said, hey, look, there's a gallows 50 cubits high, which Haman actually made for Mordecai. Maybe this was one of his friends too, I don't know. But he basically just betrayed him there, right? Said, hey, look, the gallows 50 cubits high, which Haman made for Mordecai, who spoke good on the king's behalf, is standing at the house of Haman. Right? This tells us how much in a rush Haman was to want to kill Mordecai. He had the gallows 75 feet high made overnight. Made overnight. Not easy. I don't know how complicated the gallows was, but maybe it was just let's just say it was just a pole. Even that would take a lot of time. Or you got to find a tree or at least nail some wood together to make something that high. Okay. So then what was supposed to be used to kill Haman's enemy was used to kill himself. Okay. So they hanged Haman on the gallows that he had prepared for Mordecai. Okay. I think this just tells us that as people, we shouldn't have malicious thoughts against others, because sometimes those malicious thoughts actually may backfire and hurt you instead. Right? Malice means you want to really hurt somebody. Okay? No matter what they have done, the Bible says, vengeance is mine. Right? God says, vengeance is mine. I will repay, says the Lord. So leave vengeance and justice in God's hand. You don't really need to take it into your own hands. Right? And especially don't have evil intent against somebody who just offends you slightly. Right? Just try to forgive. Try to let it go. Try to release it from your heart. So here, Haman's malice and evil intent came back to hurt him instead. He was hanged. Okay. All right, so we've come to Esther chapter 7. I think this part is fairly straightforward. We just touched upon a little bit about the marriage life of Haman and Zeresh, and that their marriage itself is not really a good example to learn from. Right. Even though outwardly, it probably seemed like a decent relationship, but from God's point of view, they were not helping each other to get closer to God. Rather, do very sinful things. And so this is what we should avoid in our future marriage as well, right? Be united to serve God. Be united to do things that are right in God's eyes, not things that actually are sinful, right? Okay, let's now kneel down and pray. Ask God to continue to guide our RHTS. Give God thanksgiving for the morning classes.